I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Vincent from San Diego.
Hi, everyone. My name is Vincent, and I'm an alcoholic. Just want to start out welcoming the newcomers. There were quite a few that raised their hands to start the meeting tonight. And I learned early in sobriety from the first sponsor I had. He said that newcomers are the reasons we have the meeting. So the newcomers have someplace to come. Where they feel a sense of understanding, of togetherness, because alcoholism is so isolating, you know, where we're by ourselves. So welcome, newcomers. And then a couple people taking tokens, congratulations. Again, such an important part of this to see what are people doing that's working. You're a great example of how to stay sober, so thank you. And Brian, great job. Brian just asked me, did you pray? Yeah, you bet I prayed. So I'm just going to talk a little bit tonight just about my story and how I got here. It's really a story about booze and about God and my experience in between the two. And I'll share some of that and how that went, how did I get from one place to another. But to start, for about 25 years of my life, I tried to maintain complete independence. I believed that's what I was here for. It's what I was put on this planet. And this dates back to being about 10 years old. It's probably the first time I can remember having this, like, absolute, like, this is my world. You know, I've got to find my way in this world. And I'm not sure where that came from. It's right around the time my parents split up. Could have something to do with that. I lived with an alcoholic parent. And so, but I had three siblings who cared and loved for me. For some reason, my head told me I'm on my own, right? I've got to do this on my own. And I did that in many different ways. Sometimes it was just to run away. A lot of times it was just to run away. Anytime there was conflict, anytime I was challenged, it was easier for me to just run away, disappear. And sometimes it was fight. Sometimes it was stand up for myself and say, no, this is how it's going to be. And usually at that time, I didn't really have to fight. I was just being an asshole. You know, like, just, I fought for no other reason than, you know, I needed to stand up for myself. And that continued for a really long time. About 5 years after that time is when I found alcohol. So somewhere in the range of 15 years old. And I remember vividly that the first time that I really felt like what it could do for me. And I was at a friend's house. It was in the afternoon after school. And somebody dared me to drink a half a pint of Johnny Walker Red. I could still feel it in my stomach. And I thought, like, yeah, I'll take that bet. And so I drank it down, and I didn't sip it. I just drank it down, and I blacked out within 10 minutes, out. And I was about a mile from home, and my friends carried me home, and I threw up all over the place, and my friend was scared to death that my mom was going to see him. So he left me there at home by myself, put a bucket next to me, and took off. I still call him my best friend. What's wrong with me, right? But you know what? The next day, I wasn't upset that I did it. I was upset that on the way home, I guess there was a fight, and I was upset that I didn't get to see that fight because I was too blacked out. I wasn't upset about the alcohol. I wasn't upset. I was like, I found something new. I was excited that this new thing now came into my life, and so I just kept at it. You know, luckily it wasn't always a half a pint of Johnny Walker Red. But it was whatever else I could get. Quite honestly, in the beginning, it was wine coolers because that was all I could stomach. You know, and then it was the booze from the parents' cabinets that we could steal and mix together and create this fun concoction. It was whatever it could be. But you know what was interesting is that I always felt that sense of, like, of independence. Like, I can do this. I have the right to do this. It's my life. I can do what I want to do. And if I want to stop, I can stop. If I want to do more, I can do more. But it's mine. And just kept going about life that way. But what I didn't know at the time was that I was alcoholic. And so that drinking kept going. We heard it. It's progressive. It just kept going. And naturally, right, alcohol became other forms of alcohol in time. And I just kept chasing that elusive feeling that, like, was perfect. You know, and I thought I knew what it was. It was like the right amount of beer and like the right amount of weed mixed in with that. And like maybe a little bit of speed in case I was going down. And like when I get there, it's going to be perfect. I don't think I ever got there. what happened was I would run right past that spot, and then I'd be out of control, right? I'd be off to the races, and then I'd be sick, and then I'd be crazy, and then, you know, I would crash a bike, or I would just do something awful. But the challenge for me during that time was that everybody else, in my view, was doing the same thing. So it was fine, right? Because I'm not alone in this. Everybody else is doing it too. So I wasn't at risk. I wasn't in danger. And kept going and kept going. And I grew up in New York, and so things were pretty accessible to us then. I mean, you can get in bars at 18, and it was kind of a fast way of life. And so I lived that way until that way got to be too fast. You know, I felt that I was on a course that was going to end in a disaster. I was living in Manhattan, and I just needed to go. I needed to get as far away from as I could. So moved to a small town in Colorado. I had never been west of the Mississippi River. I just needed to go someplace really far away because that would make me better. And so I got there, and sure enough, the same old me that was there. Some physical things started happening. You know, I fell off a roof. I was in an accident. All completely blacked out. And it was during that experience when I lived there that was the first time in my life that I acknowledged something's not right. Something about the way that I drink isn't right. I denied that for a really long time because I'd mentioned I grew up with an alcoholic parent. And the way that she drank was come home from work, black out every night, and pass out, sometimes in the bathroom, sometimes in the kitchen, sometimes in the bed. But I wasn't doing that. So I wasn't an alcoholic in my mind. But this one day, I remember I was living in this trailer, and I remember sitting on the floor and just like, I wasn't at the time willing to see that as alcoholic, but something inside me was broken. It just didn't feel right. What I was doing to other people, the way that I was treating myself, wasn't right. So I had to move, naturally. That's what's wrong. I live in the wrong place. I got to move. And so I got up and moved to Pacific Beach. Right. Idiot. I'm not that bright. And so as you'd imagine, you know, I just ran. I just got there and ran right away. It was amazing. I moved here with a girl. She left very quickly. And I met up with a guy in a bar that turned out he was a good friend from college that was my, you know, he was my party buddy in college. And so we got right after it and started going really hard. But I met a girl during that time, and she was going pretty hard too, and it was working. And we decided, right, let's get married. That's what you do. And so we got married, and a month later she was pregnant. And we had a child. What she told me sometime later was that had she not gotten pregnant, she'd have been long gone too, you know? She saw it coming. She saw the writing on the wall. And so, naturally, there were huge problems in this relationship because she had to live with me. And I just was an awful person to be around because I was so selfish. I was just the most selfish person you could imagine. I'm here with a couple guys tonight, and I shared with these guys at dinner that my wife was pregnant one night and said, I'm really sick, like I'm starving. I just need a couple eggs. Will you go to the store to get me some eggs? And I went to the store. I never came back. You know, it's just the way that I drank, you know, because the bar was on the way to the store, so I stopped at the bar. Well, a friend was at the bar, so I go to the friend's house. One thing leads to another. I don't come home. So the life continued like this, and I expected everybody else around me to just accept me for who I was. This is who I am, right? You knew this going into the relationship, so don't try to change me now. Again, right? It was this idea that like I had to be fiercely independent, and I had to fight for that independence. It had to be me. But I also wanted this other life, like I wanted this dream life that like I was good to my wife. Right, that I was a decent parent, that my employer could count on me. I liked the idea of that. I just couldn't live like that. I couldn't live like that because, as I said, I was chasing this elusive high that I was finding in alcohol. So as the relationship went on and life kind of went on, There were a couple times that I had to take a break from drinking because physically, you know, there were problems, or mentally there were problems. Therapists, you know, recommended breaks from drinking. So there were times I took some breaks. I took a 3-month break here. I actually went 12 months one time without booze. No help in a program, just no booze. And I remember that it was what it felt like was like waiting, you know, just like waiting to get back to me, waiting to get back to my life, the life that I wanted. And so that everybody else could like be okay with me and then I can be me again. But, you know, as we know, that doesn't work. It doesn't work because we're alcoholic. And unless we treat it with the spiritual condition of what it is, then we're going to keep on the same path that we're on. And so sure enough, you know, once I picked up again, it was right back to where I was. And just, you know, the book mentions, our big book mentions, I think I saw this recently, 78 times mentions the word self. And all these forms, right? Self-pity. Felt that fiercely, right? It was because it was everybody else that was like coming down on me, right? Why are they doing this to me? Why can't they just let me be me? I'm not a terrible person. Self-destruction, right? Like I was the cause of every problem that I had, I was the cause, undoubtedly, without question. Because I disregarded everybody else for my own interests. And I was alcoholic, right? So I lost control. So my interests became to get drunk. Just all self-delusion. I tricked myself into believing that I was somebody that I wasn't. I was living a life that I wasn't really living. And ask anybody else around me and they would tell you a completely different story than what I would tell you. But meanwhile, they were explaining the same experience. So just trapped in self completely. And I didn't know how to get out of it. You know, I mentioned therapists. So therapists would give me all these crazy things. This one guy told me once, you know, after you do something right, you should have a bowl of fruit. And I was like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, bowl of fruit? Like, I want a drink, you know? Like, how about a glass of scotch? You know, like, that's a reward. So just pursuit of self got me nowhere. You know, that's the reality. Of all that time that I was chasing independence and freedom, I really was actually like making life tighter and tighter on me. I was trapping myself more and more until the point that I hit the bottom, you know. And the bottom was physical and it was mental. So physically, I mean, my body was just shutting down. My body was just broken. It was you know, I was getting injured and I wasn't healing and I just my body was just shutting down some and. And mentally, as I'd mentioned, I started getting extremely fear. Fear started overcoming my life. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of rational and irrational things. I was afraid of things like, if I really stop drinking, how am I going to do the toast at my daughter's wedding? And she was 3, right? And I really believed that. Like, I can't stop drinking because I have to do that toast. Or, like, I thought things like, how would I be able to retire? I would never be able to retire if I can't drink, so I'd have to work forever, and I don't want to do that. That was really the stuff that was going on in my head. I was just afraid of everything. But I was mostly afraid of people finding out what was really going on in my life, especially my wife, because what was going on in my life outside of the home wasn't appropriate at all to be in a relationship with 2 kids. And I was scared. I was really scared, so that every time I left, I was worried that someone would be following me. And every time I came home, I was worried that someone was going to track where, you know, what up my phone and everything that I had and that, you know, my job was in on it and this whole world was coming down on me. I was really, really scared. And what I realized too, worse than all of that, was at that bottom, just morally, I was broken. You know, I have people in my life that love me. I have siblings. I had a wife. I have parents. That big Italian family, and they loved me, and they wanted me to be a good person. They taught me to be a good person, and in that moment, I came to grips that I was not a good person. I wasn't. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. I was remorseful. I was scared, and I wasn't anything near what I wanted to be, and it helped that my wife threw me out of the house. It really did. It helped. Because that morning, after the toughest night of my life, to be honest, the worst night of my life that I can remember, and alcohol was a big part of it. And I sat on the floor of my house that morning, broken, crying, hysterical crying. And I remember just feeling like either this needs to change or I need to die. Like, those are my only two choices, because I can't live like this anymore. It just hurts too bad. And as I said, an hour before that or an hour after that, I don't remember, but my wife said, it's time to go. I'm not going to put myself through this anymore. You got to go. And that was my bottom, you know, and I'm very fortunate to say that I haven't had a drink since that day. It was June 19th, 2011. And I hope that will stay my sobriety day. So enough of that part of the story. That's the booze part. But I want to read something out of the 12 and 12, because this is what my experience has been since that day, the path that I took. So it's on page 36. It says, yes, respecting alcohol, I guess I have to be dependent upon AA. But in all other matters, I must still maintain my independence. Nothing is going to turn me into a non-entity. If I keep on turning my life and my will over to the care of something or somebody else, what will become of me? I'll look like the hole in the donut. This, of course, is a process by which instinct and logic always seek to bolster egotism and so frustrate spiritual development. The trouble is that this kind of thinking takes no real account of the facts. And the facts seem to be these. The more we become willing to depend upon a higher power, the more independent we actually are. Therefore, dependence, as AA practices it, is really a means of gaining true independence of the spirit. So that morning, that made no sense to me, right? Because as I said, I went 25 years fighting for independence. And I believe the independence came from within me. And clearly that's not the case, right? For any of us that have some recovery, we know that's not the case. It's impossible to achieve sobriety being dependent upon ourselves. So I was fortunate. I was very fortunate in that. That morning, I knew that I had to go to, I had to do something about my alcoholism. I came to an understanding that that needed to be dealt with. I didn't know how it would be dealt with or what it meant to deal with it, but I knew it needed to be dealt with. So I went to the hospital because I had, as I mentioned, I have an alcoholic parent, and fortunately she's been through AA and she's been sober a long time now. And quite honestly, I resented AA because I didn't have a whole lot of respect for her. I had moved so far away and just never really regained that relationship. And so the fact that AA was connected with her, I resisted it. So I went to the hospital, and sure enough, they said, you got to go to AA. Thank you, hospital. But thank God they did, and I'm glad they did, and I'm glad they knew that that's what, you know, was necessary for me to get sober, because I went to AA. You know, I was doing my meeting commitment that I had to do through the hospital program, and I was fortunate to sit in a meeting, and a guy sat down next to me, and he stuck his hand out, and he introduced himself to me, and I introduced myself to him, and he asked me if I was new, and I said yes, and he said, I'd love to talk to you after the meeting, and he had this positivity about him, this light about him that I was very attracted to at that time, because I was broken. I said I was broken. I was helpless. Every friend that I had at that moment was my drinking friends. You know, I didn't have any true friendships at that point. You know, I mean, Jared here, we talked about this once, that in the book how it says alcoholics don't have the ability to form true partnerships with people, right? It's because I was so selfish. Like, how could I have a partnership with somebody when I was so driven by self? So this person was being kind to me. He felt like somebody like, wow, I think I could, you know, talk to this person. And so after the meeting, which was, you know, 60 minutes later, everything changed. I needed to just get out of there as fast as I could. So I got up from my seat and I started leaving, and he followed me and he grabbed me. Hey, Vincent, wait up a second. And so he pulled me back and he talked to me for 10 minutes. And he told me a little bit about alcoholism, and he told me a little bit about what he was doing to stay sober. And he asked me to call him the next day. And so I did. You know, I was excited that there was someone that showed some interest in me. Still all about me. But the next day I called him, and he said, you know, what meeting are you going to go to tonight? And so I told him what meeting I was going to go to, and he said, I'll meet you there. And he showed up on time. And I thought, like, wow, this is different, because that was not the life I was living. And so at that point he talked about sponsorship, and he talked about the steps. And I was like a deer in the headlights, you know, I had no clue. This was coming at me fast. And he was about 10 years younger than me. And so I thought, like, nothing I can gain from this guy. He's 10 years younger than me. Again, resistant, right? Independent. Like, this is about me. But I agreed to it. I said, sure, let's do it. Let's get together. And so we met in his car, which I thought was the strangest thing. Two dudes sitting in a car, right? Like, reading a book. It's really weird. It didn't feel right at all. No. You know, like a random parking lot. I thought the cops were going to come. Looking over my shoulder, but we started reading, and he shared the steps, and he said, step one, you know, God, step one, how was I going to do that? Admit that I'm powerless, and that my life's unmanageable. Well, the life unmanageable part was easy, actually. clearly, yes, life's unmanageable, but powerless, I don't know that I'm powerless. Like, do I have a little bit of a problem? Like, do I, you know, once I get started, do I drink too much? Like, okay, maybe. And he said, well, let's talk about alcoholism a little bit more. Let's talk about it a little deeper. Because again, I said, I watched somebody pass out every night. I wasn't passing out every night. It's not how I drank. And so he said, it's an obsession to drink. Do you have an obsession to drink? And I said, well, what do you mean by obsession to drink? He said, how often do you think about it? I was like, well, every day. Would you consider that obsessive? Yes, probably. Said, when you're going to a party, what do you think about? Drinking. When you're going to a game, what do you think about? Drinking. When you're going to a concert, what do you think about? Drinking. Check, 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 right? You're obsessed. I said, okay, I can agree to that. I'm obsessed. And he said, there's this idea of an allergy. And it works a little bit differently. Most things that you're allergic to, your body resists. Alcohol, being allergic to that, your body wants more of it, right? So it's like the counter allergy. And he said, when you drink, you know, did you ever try to stop at one or two or three and done that successfully? And I said, well, there's been a couple times that I've had one drink. I don't know that I was trying to stop at one drink. He said, have you ever tried to stop any at all? And I had said, well, yeah, I've tried to stop, you know, at times that I stopped drinking for 30 days or for 6 months. And he said, well, you were ever able to stay stopped? I said, no. And he said, I started sharing some of my experience. And he said, those nights that you would stay out all night, that you'd be gone for the weekend, did you mean to do that? No. Well, what made you do it? I don't know. I was drinking. He said, that's what happens with us. When we start, we can't stop. So we're obsessed with it, and to the gates of insanity, no matter what. We manipulate, we connive, we deny, we do everything we can so that we can have that first drink. And once we do, it sets us off. He said, how many times did you disappoint your wife or your parents? I said, countless times. He said, how many times did you want to? Never. It's out of control, right? It's beyond your control. It's not your choice. Once you start, you can't stop. And so... For that first time, and I remember, right, I think so many people say this, to stand up in a meeting to say, I'm Vincent, I'm an alcoholic, felt right, felt like I am. And I have to know that I am, I have to believe that I am if I want any help whatsoever. And so he also had me write my last 15 drunks, like that was part of it, like list your last 15 drunks and what the consequence of it. And that's rough. I didn't like that. What I didn't like about it more than anything was that it didn't go back that far. You know, it didn't go back that far. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And so with that experience, I said, okay, let's keep going. And then the program became about God, right? The program that he was sharing with me became about God. And I wasn't really ready for that. I had no foundation of God. I had a resistance to God, to religion in general. And so he told me, okay, no problem. Do this, this, and this, right? And he gave me like these simple instructions. Wake up, make your bed in the morning. Call 3 people a day. Commit to a certain number of meetings and actually show up to them on time. I had never been on time to anything. 15 minutes late was on time to me. And so I had said, okay, that one was a little bit hard. But the other ones, I did them. I just did those things. And I didn't realize that that had anything to do with God. But it did. What he was showing me was how to take direction from someone besides myself. So to not do things just for me, do things because someone else is suggesting them. And so that's what I did. I just got busy. You know, I got busy. He had me reading and writing. I talked about commitments and home group and doing these things. One of the best things that he did for me was the call 3 guys, because every time I called guys, number one, they answered. Which was uncommon. And number two is that they opened up to me. They shared a little bit about their lives, and their lives were a lot like my life. And I started feeling this connection to people, and so that I actually looked forward to going to meetings. You know, that like resistance that I had, the perception that I had of what AA was being overcome by the truth, by the fellowship of what this was. And so, you know, I was in it. At that point, I was in it. You know, I felt like, all right, let's try kind of the next thing. And so we went on to step three. And step three was one that changed my life, right? Because I had the biggest issue with self and with independence. And by making a decision to turn my will and my life over, I was therefore giving up that idea that it was my job in this world to be independent. I was no longer going to be that. You know, this is where that reading that I did started coming to life. Total dependence. There's another place in the big book where it talks about the paradox. And it's talking about faith, right? And people assume that it's the way of weakness, and paradoxically it is the way of strength. That all men of faith have courage. And courage was something that one needs when they're broken with fear, right? So by making a decision, but what does that mean, right? Make a decision to turn our will into life over something that like I didn't know what it was or that it existed or how do I access it, right? I had no idea what that was whatsoever. Except that he had me pray. And prayer is something that I had never really done. So it was every morning get on my knees and say the third step prayer and ask God to be relieved of the obsession of self and not for me, so that I can be an example for others. And so it introduced me into this idea of, so I'm getting sober to change my life, to make my life better, but it's bigger than my life. It's actually to help somebody else, to help them achieve sobriety, to help them get some recovery. So it was that first take into service, into doing something for somebody else, genuinely. Not to get anything myself, not for my reward, you know, not for my bowl of fruit. It was genuinely to help them and to make their life better. And by doing so, he told me, by doing so, my life will be better. And I liked this idea. I really did like this idea. And it started with the simple things, commitments. Well, he was sitting here going, man, I got a lot of commitments at this meeting, which is probably why it's a strong meeting. Right? Because the commitments, my first commitment that I had, two commitments I had very early in sobriety. Number one was set up the chairs. I hated every second of that because I had to be there 45 minutes early, right? And I didn't want to be early at all, but I had to be there because I had to set up the chairs. And if I wasn't there, people would know I wasn't there because the chairs wouldn't be set up. So I had to be there. The second thing I had was to make coffee. And I don't drink coffee. So why would I be making coffee for everybody else? I'm not even going to have a cup of this coffee. But again, it showed me I'm not doing it for me. Right, I'm doing it for the meeting. I'm doing it for the people that come to that meeting, and so started the journey of service. You know, of being involved with somebody else, and then he brought me through the rest of the steps, and the rest of the steps are just as the book describes. It's our way to form a relationship with a higher power. Right, that's what it is, and a higher power that we can depend on. That we can depend on in all things, that we can depend on in hard times and in good times, and we can depend on during everything. So, as I mentioned, my wife had thrown me out that morning, and I moved into this little crappy apartment, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I hated being away from I had two kids. They were, let's see, at the time, 8 and 5, and I was a proud dad. I love my kids, and I really wanted to be there for them, but I wasn't. And sometimes they'd come over my place, and there's this one-bedroom apartment, and they were miserable. They hated it, and they told me. They let me know how much they hated it. So I started experiencing all these emotions that I had never felt. Anxiety, never felt anxiety before, and I would shake with anxiety, completely sober. And anger, never felt anger before that. I always had kind of the elixir for anger, you know, since I had been 15. So I'd never experienced that, and it was a night in that apartment, and I was just like bubbling up, and I had my kids with me, and my son, he's a pesky little thing, and he was like irking me, you know, like kids do. He was being a kid. He was irking me, and I lost it. I totally lost it. I lost my cool. I got so angry. I stood up and I grabbed the chair and I threw the chair against the wall and I put a hole in the wall. I scared the crap out of my kids and started hysterical crying. And I scared the crap out of me. I started hysterical crying. And I called my wife, right, who hates me at the time, say, I need your help. I really need your help. I just lost it. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what to do. I just threw this chair. The kids are scared to death. I need help. And she came right there and helped. And I'm still indebted to her there. And so there was just one experience that I had early on. I had to rebuild all that stuff. You know, I met, my daughter was five and I didn't know her. I didn't know anything about her. Nothing. Because those 5 years were rough. Those 5 years were bad. I was gone. I knew she liked princesses. That's about it. That's about all that I knew. And so I had some real damage to gain. And in addition to the service I was doing in the program, I had to rebuild my life outside the program, at home particularly, but at work. And so I started to. And the way that I thought I'd fix it is to get my wife back, right? Get everything, get the home back in order. And she's a strong woman. She wasn't having that. But my sponsor kept telling me, just keep doing esteemable acts. You want to build your esteem? Do esteemable acts. Not to get your wife back, you know, not to make your kids love you, because it's the right thing to do. And so I did. I just committed to doing those things. I committed to being on time. I committed to helping where every time that I could help. I committed to bringing flowers, you know, to the house. Just committed to doing those simple things and staying in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Once we got through the 12 steps, it worked for me. You know, that the recovery part worked. I had a spiritual experience, and I stayed sober for some time through that, and my sponsor told me, okay, now it's time for you to share this experience with somebody else. And that scared me, you know, naturally, like, oh, God, no, I can't help anybody else. What do I do? And he said, you know, this isn't about you, you know? This isn't about whether you can or you can't do it. All you're doing is giving away what was given freely to you. That's it. Nothing else. You don't need to think of anything. Just everything that I took you through, you take someone else through. That's it. Don't do anything different than I did for you. And same person did that same thing for me. And I thought, okay, I can do that. And pretty quickly, I think that I was probably at that point maybe just under a year sober. I went to newcomers meetings, and if someone announced themselves new, and I stuck my hand out and I asked them if they had a sponsor. And had some heartbreaks, right? We take people in and we take them through the steps, and then they go out and we watch their life get good for a month or 2 months, and then go right back to the place that it was. And it was really hard. But the truth is, it showed me more about how important it is to stay in this thing, right? Because I saw in them what I didn't even see in myself. I saw in a short period of time, when we give ourselves to a higher power, then our lives change. So just kept doing it. And at some point, taking guys all the way through the steps and watching them get sober. It was a miracle. It really was. It was the greatest thing. There's nothing better that I've done in sobriety than to take another guy through the steps. It's where the program happens. It's where it started, right? And it's as strong as it is right now. It's how there's millions of people here. So I did that. And I made it a priority. You know, sometimes I had to miss kids' games, or I had to turn something else down because I had to meet with a guy, you know, that needed my help in sobriety. But where my life became manageable, where before I literally lived by the second. Like, I just lived right here and right now. Oh, you want to do that right now? Okay, let's go. And disregard everything else. Anything else that was waiting on me, counting on me, whatever, didn't matter. This changed. So now I would make arrangements, right? I'd say, well, I can't do that because I have to work with this guy. I'm sorry, I can't do it. I would communicate with people in advance. It was a completely different life. And sure enough, that relationship that I really wanted to pursue, went back and forth and back and forth. And I'll never forget this. There was a moment that I decided it was done. It was 3.5 years later, and I was done. I was like, I'm done trying, you know, it's time for me to move on. And I made a decision that I was done. And I actually even started, maybe I'll pursue this fine young lady. My sponsor at the time, a second sponsor that I had, told me, absolute, what are you, insane? You know, you waited 3.5 years. Like, you, this is the thing that you've talked about for 3.5 years, and you're just going to throw it away because you want to chase this kind of the next thing. So, like, delete the number, delete the Facebook, delete everything right now. No, I at least need to call back to, like, explain the situation. No, no callbacks. Trust me, she doesn't care. You're not that great of a guy. And I'd said, okay, again, I'll take direction. My wife was out of town. That Sunday she came back and she said, I'm willing to give this a try. Literally that weekend. It was wild. And that was, you know, that was about three years ago. And so, yeah, we got back together and was able to go there and be a parent to my kids, which is so important. And that the daughter that I had didn't have a relationship with at all. We're like this right now. I mean, we're like this. Like, she asked for her dad. You know, I coach her team. I'm at her school. It's like, sometimes it's overwhelming. You know, I'm like, God, I got to get out of this 12-year-old, like, girl world. But it's but it's cool. It's really good. It's good. And interestingly, the other side, my son, he and I were kind of close when I was drinking. He kind of thrived on that a little bit. I think he's got some qualities that I had. And in sobriety, we kind of went away a little bit. He thinks I'm too much on the straight and narrow. So we're working on that too. It's constant work. It's constant work. It's work every day. You know, it's work every single day. No matter, you know, when I had 9 months and I was like way in it, right? Or now with a couple years, that if I'm not in the book with somebody, I find other things that are important in my life that become more important than this. And sure enough, I become less and less connected to a higher power and less and more and more connected to myself. And that's a dangerous place for me. I don't want to be stuck in self. Because the path that I was on was really, really bad. It was really bad. It was hurting people. You know, I was going to go to the end alone, really. That's the way it was going to end up. Me alone, which is the last thing that I wanted. So, you know, there's three pieces of this program that very first sponsor that I had showed me. And he said, you know, the first thing is recovery, right? Like, you've got to do the work yourself. You've got to do the work every single day. And then unity. You've got to be part of the group. You know, you've got to be a home group. Our home group, he says, unless you're in jail or in the hospital, or on vacation, you've got to be there, right? No matter what. If you know, you're sick and you got to bump elbows instead of shake hands and sit in the back of the room, do it. And wear a collared shirt. And don't get up to go to the bathroom. He has a lot of rules. But you know what it is? Because I show up there every week, I get to know some of the guys. And if I don't show up 1 week, they call me. You know, they call me. They ask me why I wasn't there. I do a 10-step call with a guy every day. And he's got kids and I got kids. More often than not, we're talking about how crazy our lives are and not about sobriety. Because thankfully, we don't have to talk about drinking every single day, right? Because the obsession to drink for me isn't there. I don't want to drink today. I do not want to. I don't think about drinking most of the time. I don't think about it. I still think about myself quite a bit, and I know that if I think about that too much, it's going to lead me back to drinking, because that's my comfort spot. Drinking is where I'm comfortable. I was pretty good at it, too. I felt pretty good. I handled myself pretty well. I thought I did. And I could start telling myself that story, right? Like, oh, maybe I could, like, manage it now that I have all this knowledge. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there at all. So that last piece, you know, after recovery and unity is service. And the service is what I have to, if I'm not in service, then my commitment drops, you know. Like, I sponsor guys today because I really like building the relationship with the guys. You know, I do. I like that because I get them. They get me. I like when we do a fifth step. I really do. I can't wait to get in the car for a fifth step. It's like I'm going to hear the worst of them. And I'm going to be able to talk a little bit about the worst of me. The stuff that I tucked into myself so deeply for so long, that release that I got the first time I shared it was the most liberating thing that I've ever felt. And so to think that I can share that experience with somebody else is exhilarating for me today. So to sponsor the guys, and plus, like, when I'm telling them all those same rules that my sponsor told me, because I told you he's got a lot of rules and now I got a lot of rules, they're not my rules though. But if I tell them that, well, I better be doing it myself. I can't tell them to go to a meeting and sponsor guys if I'm not sponsoring guys, right? Because hypocrisy doesn't get me anywhere. I was a hypocrite for a long time. I had a lot of convictions, right? But I wasn't an honorable man, you know? I just wasn't, because I didn't hold up my end. Today, I seek to hold up my end. And what do we get from that? You know, real freedom. Today's real. I sought freedom for so long in alcohol, and I thought freedom would come, like, from the perfect high. Chased it. Chase the perfect high. Never came. Just never came. But today, not every day, but many days, that freedom comes. It comes when I wake up in the morning and I pray. Comes when I make a couple calls. Comes when I show up to where I'm supposed to show up. Comes when I do a decent day of work. That my employer expects. Comes when I come home and I check in with my family. I can lay my head on the pillow and not worry. I'm not scared of what I did the night before. Remember that feeling of like shame and guilt and remorse? And then how much effort it took to hide it? I don't have to use half of my effort every day to cover up what I had done the day or the night or the week before that. I can focus it on the now. I could focus it on the forward. It's a better life. I hope that I could stay in this. I really do. And I hope for all of you that you stay in this too. And the best thing about this, right, is the solution is right here on the wall and sitting next to you. It's right here. It's not like way up there in the sky, right, that we have to find enlightenment. We do find enlightenment, but it's through the book and it's through each other. That's my experience, at least. So I think with that, it says I got a couple minutes, but maybe I'll save everybody else a couple of minutes because I need a drink. of water, yeah. Smart water. Keeps me sober and smart. I'm thankful. I guess the last thing that I'll say is just I'm thankful Larry, who's not here tonight, but Larry, who coordinates some of the meetings here, he was real connected to a guy that was at my home group meeting. And, the guys of service, he's a great example. And I look to guys like that that are good examples in this program. Another reason why I like to go to different meetings, you see different speakers. And he came up and spoke at our home group Monday night meeting in Solana Beach a couple weeks back and just had this great story. He always does. And so after the meeting, I went up and shook his hand, and I hadn't seen him in a little while. Oh, Larry, it's great to see you. Great story. He's like, hey, do you want to speak on Saturday night? I was like, why did I say thank you? He got me. But I appreciate that, because it's uncomfortable. I wasn't looking for the opportunity, but you get put here, whether it's a service commitment or a speaking thing, you get put there. And you know what it did? For a whole week, I got into the book every day. Because I wanted to have a message from the book, right? And so it got me thinking back in terms of what is this program about for me? And so I'm grateful for that. So thank you guys all for being here, and wish you the best.